Good morning, everybody. My name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here and good to be sober with you men this morning. And it's just been great connecting with everybody last night. I'll be honest, full declaration, I was so nervous coming down here. It was such ego too, you know. I was intimidated. It's one thing me not to speak at a meeting, but I saw the thing retreat leader like right away, you know. And you guys were so kind. Because what I realized this weekend in the small sharing afterwards, the meeting last night, that we just talk the language of the heart with each other here. You know, we're just alcoholics, as Bill Wilson would say. I'm just an alcoholic trying to get along. That's me. Not perfect program, far from it. Just an alcoholic. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think underachievement is a virtue worth striving for. But thank God in Alcoholics Anonymous, we claim spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. And I know alcoholics hate getting read to, but I'm just going to read one paragraph here. Many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set there in a guide to progress, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Thank God the first 100 men and women put that paragraph in the big book. That gives a guy like me a second and third chance on a daily basis, and maybe a fourth chance. I'm so glad that we got rid of the four absolutes of the Oxford group, because I'm an absolutist by nature. If I can't do it 100% right, well, then let's not do it at all. An Alcoholics Anonymous says, just try to trudge the road. And standing here this morning and coming to the realization, my alcoholic ego is always either or. Either I'm all good or I'm all bad. And there's a guy I like to read says, it's not that, it's yes and. Yes, I'm 32 years sober and I'm still doing things that I wish I didn't do. But I'm getting on my knees on a daily basis. I'm asking for God's help. I'm trying to be actively sponsored. I'm sponsoring guys. You know, I would like that to be on my gravestone. He trudged. That's what I put my hands up. I've tried it with you good men, trudge this road. And just this morning here, chatting with guys and walking around the pond, and it's one more reminder that we're just a fellowship of equals here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We are our storytelling society. Ernie Gerchett wrote a few books about AA. He said that alcoholics, I mean, I hope you don't hear it down here, but once in a while you hear it up in New York. Well, I don't want to go into my story. I don't want to go into the crash, bang, wallop. I don't understand that. We're our storytelling society. We're our storytelling community. What binds us here together is our stories. And Ernie Gers talks about sitting around the AA campfire. And that's what we do here this weekend. We sit around the AA campfire. There's a line I misquoted for years in Alcoholics Anonymous from How It Works. I would have said, how it was, what happened, and how it is today. It doesn't say that. It says how we were, what happened, and how we are today. And there's such power in that when we sit around the AA campfire and we tell our stories. I mean, you talk about attraction, not promotion, this spiritual journey. When someone sits down at the campfire and says, you know what, I used to live like this. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I sat around this fire sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And now I live like this. That's attractive. And that's what we have here. Anybody who's new here today and the newcomer coming up there with their damp log dripping with vodka, here, throw it onto the fire and sit down with us and realize that we're very blessed people here today. My spiritual journey, there's a guy I like to read, he says, the spiritual journey of an alcoholic can be characterized by living forward and understood backwards. And that's been my spiritual journey in AA. It's one of the rear view mirror. There's a guy that speaks, said that alcoholics' lives can be characterized by seconds and inches. Boy, can I identify with that? A couple of seconds that way and a couple of inches that way. and I wouldn't be standing here today. But what I've come to really realize in my spiritual up and down, long winding road in Alcoholics Anonymous is this. And one of our friends has got the thing on the back of his t-shirt, Carl Jung. Carl Jung says, bidden or not bidden, God is present. My higher power was always there. Even when I was lying on a barroom floor so drunk that I couldn't stand on my own two feet, my higher power was there. I was so mired in my alcoholism that I couldn't receive his love and grace. I was so wrapped in self, so immersed in this disease. But I realized that God was always there. There's a retreat house upstate New York, and you walk in the door, and the doormat, it says, you feel far from God. Who moved? God never moved. It was me and my alcoholism. I'm not, you know, my own spiritual journey. I grew up in Northern Ireland, and I grew up during the Troubles. We had this low-level civil war going on, and fought along religious lines. And I was a working-class Catholic from a working-class neighborhood, and I remember 6 or 7 years of age when the Troubles really started to tick up in the late 60s and early 70s, and there was people literally shooting each other outside the front door over who had the right God. We were burnt out of our house in the middle of the night by the opposing paramilitaries. I remember as a young kid, they put a gun to my father's head. I thought they were going to shoot him. And I would have said, God, he never came down our street very often. And I ran with that. But I don't think that's what really made me an alcoholic. I think the closest thing to a spiritual awakening that actually wasn't one was drinking alcohol. My God, it's so close. I mean, it says in there, most people drink because of what alcohol does to them. Our book talks about it, a sense of conviviality, a social lubricant. That's not why I drink. I drink because what alcohol does for me. Alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for a normal or even a heavy drinker. One drink changes how I feel about me, you, and this. And that's why I'm going to keep coming back for more. I would love, like it says in the book, to drink with impunity. I would love to have been a consequence-free drinker. I would love that. But there was consequences with my drinking from day one. But because this is all happening at a level I don't realize, because of what alcohol is doing for me, I will ignore what it's doing to me. And I will push people out of my life. I'm a great believer that God works through people. People tried to help me. I was friendly with a guy. Well, not friendly. I met him a few times, Bill B., that wrote, My Name is Bill W., in the movie, and When Love is Not Enough. Used to get sober up in Queens. Nice guy. Passed away now. And he used to go up to Stepping Stones when they were writing Lois's biography. And he says that Bill had passed away at this stage. And he would go up there, and show you how long it was ago, he put the old cassette in, hit the record button, and just ask Lois a couple of questions. And she would just talk, you know, extemporaneously about AA and Bill and Bob and the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, and they were just talking back and forth. And she says, you know, it's amazing that love is not enough. And he stopped the recording. He said, that's the title of the book. Because it's so true. If love could have got me sober, I'd have been sober a long time before AA. People, good people that cared for me, tried, but nothing had the depth and weight of a guy, a New York City pressman, reached me at a level in Alcoholics Anonymous that nobody before had been able to reach me. And I love an Alcoholics Anonymous that we're not a religious movement. We're sitting here, okay, at a Catholic monastery or retreat house, but we talk about the great miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous last night when Bill had that spiritual awakening in Towns Hospital. Bill meeting Bob in Mother's Day weekend of 1935. But I think one of the great miracles of AA, November 1934, Bill Wilson sitting in Brooklyn Heights on a bleak November drinking bootleg gin, two bottles at a time, and his old friend came to visit him, Abby Thatcher. And Abby Thatcher gotten sober in the Oxford group. And one of the tenets of the Oxford group was that you would go and testify. We don't like that word in AA. We'd rather say we... which is a little like, you know... We'd rather say we sure, you know what I mean? Like, we like that better. But he was going to testify. They said, can you think of anybody you could testify? I know the very guy, you know. So he makes his way over to Brooklyn. And he sits down at the kitchen table with his old drinking buddy. And Bill's ready for a whole theological... Abby says, I've got religion. And Bill's like, oh, here we go, you know. And he's ready for a whole theological discussion. What's the old joke in AA? What came first, the chicken or the keg? You know, a lot of guys that got drunk trying to figure that one out. And Abby Thatcher said, I think God works through people. And one of the great miracles of AA, he says to Bill, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Right there, the debate in society was dissolved. How can you argue with that? And that's the wonderful thing about our program. It's a spiritual program. And that one statement at that kitchen table made the doorway of Alcoholics Anonymous, the spiritual doorway, so broad, roomy, and inclusive that this program will meet you exactly where you are in your spiritual journey. You just got to make a start. You know, and the closest thing for me that wasn't an awakening was drinking alcohol. It was so close. But I think the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, on my spiritual journey, I didn't have... The guy says, you want to find God? God's not lost. He's right there in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a great believer that the 12 steps, they're not 12 steps up to anything. They're 12 steps down to humility. They're 12 steps down to ego deflation. I love that our program is so spiritual solution. We talked about it last night. The first step states the problem. I would have thought alcohol should have been mentioned in every step, but the first 100 people in AA were so gifted. The first step states our problem, and then immediately they turn us into 11 steps of solution. Solution. Alcohol is only mentioned in the first half of the first step. The rest of that program is designed to give me a program that I can live out there one day at a time under God's conditions rather than my demands and find a spiritual basis for living. And I fought this thing so much. And the program didn't come easy to me. And when I think about it, I mean, I was, even before I came to AA, he could have characterized me. You know what I was like? I was like an alcoholic version of the Heisman Trophy. Bottle of vodka under my arm. Everybody keep away. And people trying to help me. But everyone in here, I guarantee it's got a day or more. And then they say what I believe is the most spiritual words in an AA talk, and then. When I hear an alcoholic say, and then, I sit up because I know the higher power is coming in the next sentence. There's not a person in here today that hasn't had an and then moment. Mine was sitting in apartment 1A, 7800 Shorefront Parkway, blinds closed, phone off the hook, door locked. Here's a recipe for a happy dinner, for a little levity. Lock yourself in an apartment for about a week and a half and play the saddest blues music. I would listen to like the great Warren Zevon. If you won't leave me, I'll find somebody that will. This is for the songs alcoholics like to listen to, you know. Or the Al-Anon version of that song. If you leave me, can I come too? I'm just joking, everybody, is a double winner. So I'm sitting there. I was AWOL. I mean, it's pretty pathetic, actually. I worked in a job. We're talking earlier on. I worked in a bar where I could really walk behind the stick at 6 o'clock at night and pour myself a drink and put it in the speed rack. And the end of my drinking, I couldn't even get to that job. What's the old saying? Booze gave me the wings to fly, and then it took away the sky. We talk about the rapacious creditor. In the Merchant of Venice, Shylock just wanted £1 of flesh, not this disease. It'll take my job, it'll take my car, it'll take my wife, it'll take my kids, it'll take the shirt off my back. But what it really wants is me 6 feet under. There's a lot of terminal diseases out there today. I'm not familiar with those, but I'm familiar with this one. This disease of alcoholism will kill me stone dead, with or without a drink in my body. I don't need booze to burn my life to the ground. I'll talk about it later on today. I almost burnt my life to the ground in AA because I wouldn't accept these spiritual principles. I was still trying to do it my way. And I'm sitting in an apartment, August 19th of 1992, and God showed up. A piece of paper came under my door. I thought it was an eviction notice. I looked at this piece of paper, and it said in this piece of paper, "What I've been hearing since I was 16 back in Northern Ireland. Paul, you're a nice guy, but you drink too much." And I had a man's telephone number on it. That's strange enough, a piece of paper coming under your door. The stranger thing is, I called the number because I'm Irish, I'm stoic, I'm a wall builder. Robert Frost, the poet, says a wall's a good thing if you're a New England farmer, but not if you're an alcoholic of my variety. And I found out through this program, which I'll talk about later on today, that I built that wall. I put every brick. Nobody else. And the thing about walls, it keeps me in, but it keeps you out. And I called this man and his wife, a great member of Al-Anon. A lot of people from the Bronx would take bungalows in Rockaway for the summer. And he was one of those guys. And his wife, Kitty, they lived down in Daytona Beach for many years too. I heard her saying, "Jerry, I think it's that Irish guy on the phone." And I heard him coming to the phone. And he says, "Where are you?" And I said, I told him where I was. And he says, "Me and another man's going to come to your apartment." And I said, "I can't stop drinking." I said, "I can't stop drinking." He says, "Get down on your knees and say a prayer. And we'll be there in 20 minutes. And I hung up the phone, and I'll be honest with you, my first thought was, get down on my knees. I thought this guy was going to come over there and show, I don't know what I thought he was going to do. You know, come in there like a cape, super sober. I don't know. But get down on my knees. I hadn't got on my knees in 15 or 20 years. I'd pushed God so far, my higher power so far out of my life. I would curse. I mean, it's almost like I would get all these drunks and I'd lock myself in the apartment. I'd even curse God. You know, I'm so melodramatic, you know. I remember talking to a priest at Mount Marissa when I first got sober in Staten Island. I said, I used to drink and I'd be on these drunks, locked in the house, out of my mind on drink, drinking for days and days on end, in and out of consciousness. I would curse God, using profanity. And he put his arm around me and he says, "At least you were keeping the communication lines open." Just keep Do you think God can't handle that? And this, about 20 minutes later, right on the nose, and these two men come into my apartment. Two regular guys. One guy was a subway conductor, the other guy was a commercial removalist guy in Manhattan. But like our book says, they're armed with the facts about themselves. If I've learned nothing else in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's that God works through people. That's why I want to be on the journey. I don't mean, as I said last day, there's times for solitude, but thank God this is not a solitary existence. I want to be with my fellow alcoholics. And these two men come over, and I thought they were going to come and talk to me about my drinking, because back in August of 92, the few people left in my life, that's how the conversation went. Maybe you've had that experience yourself. Hey, Paul, we need to talk about your drinking. Do you know what you did last night? And I was standing there. What does Dr. Bob say in the story, getting scolded? And I'd be standing there. And as the people are talking to me, these are non-alcoholics, I'm thinking to myself, I wish they would go away so I could go back drinking again. But here's the ironic thing. These two men showed up at my apartment. What's that book, God Calling? This was God Calling. These two men showed up at my apartment and they came in. And I was sitting there like that classic man in the bed. I never went to Skid Row, but I brought Skid Row to me. You know how we live? Bottles all over the place. House in disarray. And they sat down. And here's the thing, guys. They didn't talk about my drinking. They sat down and they told story after story of their drinking. And then I was going to say the magic happened, but that would make it seem like a trick. And this is no trick. The mystery happened. They talked about them, and I found out about me. I told these, talk about God working through people. I told these two men within 20 minutes something I hadn't even told myself. I coughed up the big fur ball, and I said to this man, or these two men, Jerry C. and John K., I said, I can't stop drinking. I don't know what's wrong with me. The last time they put me in Peninsula Hospital, I was convulsing so bad that they put me in a restraining sheet. I was drinking the first day I got out of the hospital. What the hell's wrong with me? And I remember like it was yesterday, Jerry put his arm around me and he said what I think is also one of the most spiritual statements in Alcoholics Anonymous. He put his arm around me and he says, Paul, help is on the way. Everybody in this room has in a moment something, I'm sure, similar to that. When you first run into alcoholics or run up against Alcoholics Anonymous, little did I know there would be my sobriety date, a subway conductor and a commercial removals guy working this program, carrying this message to the still. They weren't both sober a long time in AA. And they wore off in some ivory tower reminiscing how it is not the way it used to be. They were still in the front lines doing the heavy lifting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that would be, there's life, I could characterize my life. If you were to put my life up on two charts, like when you see sales teams, you put my life up on two charts, like, I spent half my life trying to push God out of my life. And I've spent over half my life in AA trying to get God into my life. And if you put up in two charts, it wouldn't be a straight line down and a straight line up, but you could see the general direction. Life before AA and life after AA. And this spiritual basis, Bill Wilson wrote a letter one time, he says, the alcoholic must find a spiritual basis for living or he will die drunk. And he goes on to say in that letter that some alcoholics would rather make a date with an undertaker than live by spiritual principles. You know what these steps in the spiritual journey have told me? That I'm not right. I almost went to the graveyard trying to prove that I was right, that I could figure this out. What's the old joke in AA? They're putting the alcoholic into the grave and they hear a voice. Shh, what's that noise? I was right. I mean, it's insane. I will prefer alcoholic death over spiritual help. What's the book say? They live by spiritual principles or die an alcoholic death. They're not easy. I mean, you say that to a normal person. They're like, hey, sign me up for spiritual principles. You say to an alcoholic, and like, oh, let me think about that and get back to you, you know? How bad is the death again, you know? Is it really, really bad, you know? I mean, that's why normal, we are not... When they say in that book, we are bodily and mentally different from our fellows, man, they're not kidding. Thank God this book and all our literature is written by alcoholics for alcoholics, because they get me and I get them. Here's a guy who wrote this book years ago, and the words, like I read this morning, coming right off the page, meet me exactly where I am. On my spiritual journey, I said last night, up and down, winding road. But I try. I like what Merton says. God, I don't know what your will is today, but I think the desire to do your will pleases you. That's why I woke up this morning. That was my prayer this morning. Not changing the world, but what's the third step in the 12 and 12? Our whole problem had been the misuse of willpower. We tried to bombard our problems rather than bring them into alignment with God. I love that alignment. The best analogy I saw for the spiritual journey in AA, especially steps 2 and 3, are on a retreat, and a priest, and he put this child's bicycle up on the, like, on the small bicycle, and he says, God's will is like the back wheel. It's always going straight and it's always going the right direction. He says, the front wheel, that's my will. I want to go here. I want to go there. I want to go back over here again. He said, the whole program, the whole spiritual journey, the whole 12 steps of AA is designed for one thing, to line the back wheel up with the front wheel. So you start to go where God wants you to go. Michael Judge, the priest that died on 9/11, casualty number one. Great man, sober 25 years, done a lot of retreats. His prayer was, God, take me where you want me to go today. Have me meet who you want me to meet. Have me say what you want me to say. And above all, keep me out of the way. It doesn't get any more simple than that. If it's God, it's simple, and it's simple if it's God. And this whole program here is ego reduction. So as I said, they're my journey. And I love the fact, talking these last few minutes about, A gives me a front row seat for the very best humanity has to offer. I'll tell a little story about that kitchen table moment when Debbie Thatcher said that. I was back in Ireland. My brother's sober over there. He came in a couple of years. I got sober in New York. And I would go back a lot before I got married and had children. I'd go back at least once a year, Christmas. And I was back there one Christmas. And I was sober a few years. And I was asked to speak at a meeting in Belfast. And I don't know if there's no Northern Ireland history, the troubles, that a prison outside of Belfast called the Mays Prison, where they keep all the political prisoners. And the day after Christmas, they call it Boxing Day over there. And during visiting hours, one of the paramilitary Protestant leaders got murdered. And the country was on the brink of the Civil War. I mean, it was bad. And my brother says to me, we can't go down into Belfast tonight. He says, they're burning buses, there's barricades, there's rats all over the place. I said, I will go anyway. And he says, you've been living in New York too long, you know. When we get in the car and pick up these two guys, now, I don't know if you know or not, but West Belfast is all Catholic. So there's four Catholics in the car, myself included. And I love the AA gallows humor, because we're driving, we took this circuitous route over the Peace Line, we're going into East Belfast, which is all Protestant, and there was like riots, we're skirting one riot, skirting another riot. And I love AA gallows humor, because one of the guys in the car said, just think, the last time a Catholic was in this part of Belfast after dark, he was in the trunk of the car, you know, we all laughed at that. You know, sort of laughed at that, you know. And we finally got our way to the meeting. It was on the Antrim Road up in East Belfast. Sorry, Woodville Road. And the young teenage kids over there, they do a thing called joyriding, where they'll steal cars and drive around and burn them out. So we pull up in our car, four strange faces in the neighborhood. And you can see these young teenagers doing one of these. And the chairperson of the meeting, or the secretary as they call it, was standing outside the meeting smoking a cigarette, small meeting, and he recognized one of the guys he knew, you know, A is pretty provincial in Northern Ireland, and he recognized one of the guys who was with us, and he shouts over to these young teenagers, hey, leave that car alone, these guys are friends of ours. And we went over, and he says, thanks, he says, and he realized, I really appreciate the effort you made to get here tonight. And the point that I'm trying to make is, we went into that meeting, and all over the 6 o'clock news, and all over the streets, Protestants and Catholics ratting, which bombings, petrol bombs, the whole nine yards. I can't think of one place, never mind Belfast, but Northern Ireland that night, that Catholics and Protestants were sitting together, but they were sitting together in a meeting of AA. And all that stuff that was all over the 6 o'clock news was left out in the parking lot where it belonged. And we talked about our common problem and our common solution. And in that, there was far more united us than ever divided us. I'm not saying like after the meeting we went skipping down the street singing Kumbaya, you know, I'm not saying that. But these guys thanked us for the effort we made. And I thought to myself, and I said to the guys, and I could say they're probably a nerd because they live over there. I said to my brother, I said, that really moved me. I said, my God. AA, our spiritual journey, this fellowship of equals on the spiritual journey, that's God, God of that inclusive, not exclusive. And I said, my experience in AA, use a football analogy, if you put one toe out of the end zone, the higher power will come 99.9999 and meet you. Just one little effort. And that's been my story in Alcoholics Anonymous. A friend of mine was at a meeting in Tel Aviv. There's an English-speaking meeting over there. It's actually in a bomb shelter, because it's not the bomb shelter anymore. And he said at the end of the meeting, it's an English-speaking meeting, and he said at the end of the meeting, they were forming the Serenity Prayer. And he said there was a, what's the old thing, in, is it odd or is it God? He said this Jewish man, let me get this right, this Jewish man, religious Jewish man, was standing next to a Muslim woman. And because of their respective religions, they weren't allowed to have physical contact. And my friend says there was this awkwardness and a bit of a pregnant pause. And then she picked up one side of the big book. And she held one side of the big book. And he held the other side of the big book. And the circle was formed. If that's not God working through people, if that doesn't give you a front row seat for what we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous, these 12 steps, this program, the spiritual journey that's laid out for us. You know the wonderful thing about AA? The 12 steps in the wall, the spiritual journey, are the 12 steps that were on the wall at my first meeting. It's not like you're 10 years sober and they go, well, guys, Paul's 10 years sober tonight. And Paul, can you come up here and we'll give you the steps that you get when you're 10 years sober. Here you go. Congratulations. Or you're 20 years sober. So the steps in the wall are the same steps in the wall when I walked to my first meeting. So the steps don't change. So that can only mean one other thing. I change. We change. Because that program, it's unbelievable. It never gets old. It never gets stale. It never gets fresh. We're talking about Emmett Fox earlier on. Emmett Fox used to say, you can say the same prayers every day. Just say them with fresh feeling. And that's what those steps are. Every time I go through those steps of the sponsee, I'm as excited as, I don't know if he's excited, but I'm excited. One word kind of steps. It's uncovering. As Chuck Chamberlain said, the spiritual journey is one of uncovering, discovering, discarding, letting go. And if anything this weekend, that's what I like to talk about. I found out now the hard way that this spiritual journey is not about giving up. When I give something up in AA, my ego wants a seat at the negotiation table. I'll do this, but I won't do that. I'll forgive him, but I'm not forgiving her. But when I let go absolutely, I'm not even in the room. I'm letting the negotiations go on ahead without me being there. And that's what this spiritual journey of the 12 steps has told me. I think my whole goal in Alcoholics Anonymous and this spiritual journey with used people in this program is to get my fingerprints off my life and get God's fingerprints onto my life. Every time I'm in a jackpot in AA, if a spiritual CSI team come in, they're only going to find one set of fingerprints, and it's not God's. It's always me. So this weekend, with these people, one more reminder, whatever the analogy is, get out of the driver's seat and get my fingerprints off my life so my higher power's fingerprints can get on my life and get that child's bicycle going where it's meant to go. That's all I'll say. Thank you so much.